Moore has not arrived?
No, both Dr. Pulliam and Dr. Moore are on the phone.
Oh.
Sorry.
So that's why they're clustered.
Yes, sorry.
You better be careful the use of that phrase. There's certain distance between us. I'm calling in from Rockingham.
Yes, sir. Okay. TJ.
Yes, sir.
No, it's your name tags that are clustered around the telephone device.
Oh, okay.
I can't see them, but they're all here in front of me so that I know you're there.
There you go. I've been witness to that before, that little cluster phenomenon.
That's right. Dr. Moore, are you also there?
Yes, sir.
Great. And so everyone who's able to arrive, Dr. Christian is not here. There was a little traffic congestion getting here today, so I was concerned that some individuals were delayed due to the construction. I think we've got enough people to start, though. So I am going to open and call the meeting of the Technology and Equipment Committee is now in session. I want to welcome the council members, staff, and visitors to the Technology and Equipment Committee meeting. This is a business meeting that is open to the public, but it is not a public hearing. Therefore, discussion will be limited to members of the Technology and Equipment Committee and staff unless questions are specifically directed to someone in the audience. The focus of the agenda for this meeting is to review the policies and methodologies of Chapter 9 and the petition submitted in the earlier spring to determine if changes are needed for the proposed 2016 State Medical Facilities Plan. Finally, we will look at the data and the draft need projections for lithotripsy, gamma knife, linear accelerator, PET scanners, MRI scanners, and cardiac catheterization equipment. Following our meeting today, the Council's recommendations will be forwarded to the State Health Coordinating Council for consideration at the June 3, 2015 meeting. After the Council's meeting, a proposed 2016 State Medical Facility Plan will be made available for public review. Throughout July, a series of 6 public hearings on the proposed plan will be held. The dates of those hearings are on page 13 of the 2015 SMFP. Also, during the July and August, we will be accepting petitions and comments on the proposed 2016 plan. The deadlines for those petitions and comments are also listed on page 13 of the 2015 SMFP. I will take a few minutes to ask members of the committee for a brief introduction of yourself so that the public will know who you are and who you represent. In the interest of time, we will make the introductions briefly, and then we will also have the staff introduce themselves. My name is Dr. Chris Ulrich. I am a private practice neuroradiologist in Charlotte, and I'm an at-large member of the council and the chair of the council as well.
I'm Trey Adams. I represent small business. I work for the Lundy Group in Raleigh, which is a commercial real estate and development firm in the Triangle.
I am Dick Akers. I'm a private practice ophthalmologist in Gastonia, North Carolina, and I'm an at-large member.
Dr. Moore?
Hello?
Yes, Dr. Moore, could you introduce
yourself? Yes, sir. This is Jeff Moore. I'm an at-large member of private practice orthopedic surgeon in Moorhead City.
Welcome. And Dr. Pulliam?
Hey, y'all. TJ Pulliam. I'm sitting in ex officio. I'm an at-large member and interested in hearing the discussion today. Thanks.
Thank you. And now we'll go with the staff, starting with Paige.
Paige Bennett, a planner.
Tom Dixon, Denny Base Medical.
Amy Craddock, planner. Jill Brawny, Attorney General's Office.
Welcome, Jill.
Mark Representative, Assistant Chief.
Greg Jakubowski, Assistant Chief Planning.
Shelley Caraway, Healthcare Planning.
And Mr. Pratt, the Division Director, may be able to join us later in the meeting as well.
We do have one other staff member present. Gloria Hill, Project Analyst, COA.
Thank you, Gloria. Have I got everybody now? And welcome members of the public as well, but I'm not going to ask you to identify yourselves today. As is required, we will review Executive Order 46, the reauthorizing of the State Health Coordinating Council issued on 4 March 2014. We have certain procedures to observe before taking any action at the meeting of the SHIC or subcommittees of the SHIC. I remind all members that it is your duty to act always in the best interest of the public without regard to your own professional, institutional, or financial interests. You should recuse yourself from voting on any matter on which you cannot meet this standard. Members of the SHIC are expected to and should confer with DHHS on any matters that come before them in the development of the SMFP. No member of the SHIC, however, may confer with any DHHS employee regarding any proposed provision of the SMFP or any proposed or pending certificate of need application in which the member has a direct conflicting professional, institutional, or financial interest, except in public meetings conducted by DHHS or the State Health Coordinating Council. The ethical standards for the State Health Coordinating Council require that each member disclose any professional or institutional interest he or she may have in any matters coming before the Technology and Equipment Committee for action at this meeting. The chair will determine if the member needs to remove himself or herself from voting on the matter in order to ensure the integrity of the actions of the Technology and Equipment Committee. The ethical standards also require each member to disclose any financial benefit he or she may derive from any matter coming before the Technology and Equipment Committee for action today. In the event of such a financial benefit from a matter, the member shall recuse himself or herself from voting on the matter. The term financial benefit is defined in Executive Order 46, which each of the members has reviewed. All of the members have completed disclosure sheets describing various interests and actions that they feel should be disclosed. Those sheets are available for review by the public. I will now pause for a moment to allow the members to review the matters on the agenda and to make their determinations. Are there any members of the committee who desire to recuse themselves from voting on any matter on the agenda today? Dr. Moore?
No.
No. Dr. Pulliam?
Ex officio, don't plan to vote unless you need me to.
All right. And I will recuse myself from voting on the intraoperative MRI issue, although I will feel free to comment. Since we have an even number of people in the committee today, in the event that we have a 2-2 vote, I will deem that to be an acceptance rather than a rejection today. So people should bear that in mind, given the number, the small number of voting members we have available. Hopefully that won't be the case, but anyway, fair warning. I remind members that if any other items of business come before the committee today that are not on the agenda, the disclosure requirements apply. In addition, if in the course of deliberations an interest or benefit becomes apparent that you had not previously disclosed or realized, you should advise the chair before the Technology and Equipment Committee takes action on that particular matter. Hearing no other committee concerns, we'll move to approve the minutes of the September 9, 2014 meeting. I need a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion, revisions that need to be made regarding the minutes? Hearing none, please signify adoption by saying aye.
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 Thank you. We'll now move on to Chapter 9, which is the MRI section initially. We'll hear from Paige Bennett on the review of the policies and the need methodologies for MRI.
Okay. So there are, because of the review of the need methodology, the need methodology can be found on page 145 of the 2015 State Medical Facilities Plan. The acute care bed service area, as defined in Chapter 5 of the 2015 State Medical Facilities Plan, continues to be the service area for the fixed MRI scanners. The fixed MRI service area is a single county unless there is no licensed acute care hospital located within the county, and those counties are grouped with the single county where the largest proportion of patients received inpatient acute care services. The methodology for MRI scanners is a bit more intricate. There are tiers of need thresholds based on the number of scanners, which can be found on page 147. Weighting of procedures based on complexity, which also can be found on 147. And a method to detail with MRI service areas that do not have a fixed MRIs but have mobile MRI scanners serving the area. The steps in the methodology are, we convert the current inventory of clinical, fixed, and mobile MRI scanners in each MRI service area by site to fixed equivalent magnets. A value of one fixed equivalent magnet will be assigned for each existing and approved fixed MRI scanner. Temporary mobile services will not be counted separately. The number of MRI scans performed at each mobile site are divided by the threshold for the service area to determine the mobile site fixed equivalent. Days to be operated are calculated as a fraction of the total days of service to be provided by an approved mobile scanner not yet in service. The inventory for MRI excluded MRI scanners used for research only, non-clinical MRI scanners, and MRI scanners awarded based on need determinations for a dedicated purpose or demonstration project. We then look at the total number of fixed or mobile MRI scans performed at each site, delineated by type, such as inpatient, outpatient, with or without contrast or sedation. Using the weighting value chart on page 146, we multiply the number of MRI scans by type according to their weighting adjustment value in order to determine adjusted total MRI procedures for all sites in each MRI service area, and then calculate the average of those procedures. Utilization thresholds are listed on page 148 and are used to compare the average procedures per fixed equivalent magnet with the threshold to determine if there is a need. There is an exception that there will be no more than one MRI scanner need determination in any one service area per year unless there is an approved adjusted need determination. And with that, that concludes the methodology. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions about the current standard methodology? Hearing none, we'll move on to the first petition. Well, actually, it says I need to have a recommendation to approve the methodology.
Yeah,
so moved. Second. All those in favor of approving the current methodology signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? It is adopted. Let's move on to the petition for new MRI policy by J. Arthur Dosher Memorial Hospital. I'll ask Paige to review the agency report and analysis.
Okay. The petitioner was J. Arthur Dosher Memorial Hospital. We received two comments against the petition and two comments from the petitioner in support. And we received in one of those 32 letters of support from various facilities. So the request from J. Arthur Dosher Memorial was that they requested a policy adjustment and a change to the methodology in the 2016 State Medical Facilities Plan regarding magnetic resonance imaging equipment. This included adding a new policy, TE2, as an alternative to the addition of policy TE2. They included a change to the MRI need determined methodology by adding steps 13 and 14. So some of the agency reports. There are two fixed MRI machines in the county and one mobile machine. The number of procedures performed in Brunswick County service area in the 2015 SMFP is 62.3% of the number of procedures needed to generate a new need for a new MRI machine. Dosher performed 22.5% of the adjusted procedure total, or 1,246 weighted procedures. The petitioner performed fewer than the number of procedures required to meet the threshold for a need determination for one machine in a county without an existing fixed MRI, which is 1,716 weighted procedures. Also, the petitioner requests in the proposed language that the threshold tier of the adjusted MRI scans for such a replacement shall equal that of a service area with no MRI scanners. This proposed change would require an applicant to meet the minimum threshold of 1,716 weighted procedures for zero fixed MRI scanners. The current threshold for the Brunswick service area is 4,118, which is currently the threshold for two scanners. If this policy were approved, a lower threshold requirement with the condition that MRI services must be offered full-time has the potential of being seen as inequitable treatment. For example, certain facilities that have higher utilization than the petitioner, i.e. those with multi-scanner service areas that are not in contract with a vendor for part-time services would not be able to replace their contract with a fixed scanner under this policy. In addition, the wording of this policy limits the type of applicants to hospitals only and not any type, not all types of facilities that could provide MRI services, such as independent diagnostic centers. Finally, if the policy were enacted, the petitioner qualified under the conditions as they are currently written. The resulting outcome would not increase the number of fixed scanners in the Brunswick County service area. They would be replacing one machine with another, but the MRI scanner located at Dozier is a grandfathered scanner. Thus, this equipment was approved prior to the time that the requirement for a certificate of need for MRI scanners came into effect. The vendor would be able to locate that equipment in any other service area in the state. So therefore, it could increase the inventory, not necessarily increase the inventory in the petitioner's county, but it could increase the overall statewide inventory because it has the potential to be placed in another health service area. Given the available information submitted by the March 20, 2015 deadline, the agency recommends denial of the petition.
Thank you, Paige. I have traditionally treated the agency recommendation as a motion de facto and not required that it be seconded or proposed and seconded. So on that basis, the motion is the agency recommendation to deny the petition. This is now open for discussion.
Is there any way to recognize a couple of people here who can speak to this a lot better than I can, or I think any of us can?
There is a way to do that.
Yeah, well, I'd like to do that. I'd like to do that for Connie Pittman.
And her standing is?
Her standing is she's the head of radiology there with the petitioning facility.
Mm-hmm. I'll entertain that after other comments from the committee. Is there anyone else that wants to make a comment prior to my recognizing Dr. Aker's request?
I'd like to hear what she has to say.
You would like to hear it first, okay.
First, yeah.
Dr. Moore, anything you would like to say?
No, I don't have any comment.
Okay, and Dr. Pulliam?
I'm all ears.
All ears.
Yes, sir.
As alluded to in the opening statement, this is not a public hearing. I will grant the request of Dr. Akers for a comment not to exceed 4 minutes. Please step up where we can all hear you, and why don't you come to the end of the table and join us in the middle chair. Then everyone can see you equally. So state your name, and you can either stand or sit as you choose.
I'm Connie Pittman. I'm the director of radiology at Dozier Hospital. I've been there 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the director, seven, assistant director prior to that. One of the problems that we have with not owning our own scanner is the location. It's at a plaza, which is 5 or 6 miles away from us.
Mm-hmm.
When we do an inpatient, we have to ship them by ambulance, which is our cost. Round trip runs anywhere from $650 per patient. By the time we pay the agency fee, on top of that, per study, it's a fee per study, most of our patients are Medicare. We're actually going in the hole for every inpatient that we do. Also, we've not had MRI on our campus for about 10 years, so we have limited services both to our hospitals, which we now have a hospitals program, and to our ED facility. So from that perspective, not having control of that. As a manager, they also, if we're not busy, their staff leaves after lunch. So any add-ons, anybody that comes into the ED would either have to be shipped or admitted and waited till the next day to be inpatient.
Clearly understood. Offer me some insight into the prior presence of an MR at the hospital prior to 10 years ago and why it's not there now?
It was a mobile. And I was the assistant director, so I wasn't really involved in that whole decision. But my understanding is that Alliance had the CON and was willing to install a fixed magnet, and we had the space at the plaza. That it was a new building.
Mm-hmm.
So they put the magnet in, the plaza we took is 5 to 6 miles away from our main campus. Mm-hmm. And the other issue with that is contrast. You have to have physician on site. Mm-hmm. There is a doctor that's there 3 or 4 days a week. He is willing, if we have an emergency, to step in and help. However, if he's on vacation, I either cannot do contrast studies, or I have to try to run around South Fork and find a doctor willing to go in there and take the responsibility. And sometimes that's on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of issues that would be eliminated by bringing that magnet back to our campus and putting it under our control.
Mm-hmm. And what prevents the magnet from being mutually relocated to the campus from its current underutilized position?
And that's something that the senior team and Alliance would be working on.
Yeah, it would be a private contractual arrangement.
Yeah.
Okay, just, you know, I understand the hardship. I'm a radiologist. I'm abundantly clear on what you've described and the undesirable situation you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions that anyone wants to ask beyond the informational questions that I asked? Dr. Aker, any additional?
I was going to say if we reject this recommendation by the staff, what would happen then?
Okay. I want to finish questions first, okay. Then I'll talk about procedure.
Okay.
Dr. Moore, any questions for clarification that you would like to ask the radiology manager?
No questions, thank you.
And Dr. Pulliam?
No, sir.
Trey?
I don't have any questions. I have some comments, but I'll...
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you for your time.
Dr. Aker, I'll outline what the options are.
Okay.
The council and its members are not obligated to rubber stamp the agency analysis and recommendation, and we certainly have had situations where the council has not adopted the recommendation and opted. So that's part of our responsibility and our duty. The way you would handle that is to essentially deny or vote no on the agency request, which would then open the opportunity to move to approve the petitioner's request, or you might propose another intermediate or alternate solution as a petition substitute, if you will. Although I will tell you that in general, I am loath to make policy on the fly, just because we don't have the opportunity to just kind of think through each of the portions of it. Now, we are in the first part of the plan, so therefore, if a proposal was, let's say we adopted the proposal, then it would go to the June 3rd SHIC, and assuming it was adopted at that point, it would then go out for public comment. And the committee will meet again, and I think we're in September for this committee. The options would be, at that point, to reaffirm the approval, withdraw the approval, and essentially affirm the agency's analysis at that meeting, or approve a different policy variation from the one requested.
So you're saying if we decide today to accept it, that's not the end of the line necessarily. They still have a chance to get what they're
asking if you accept the agency recommendation, the discussion basically will stop because there is nothing in the plan that goes out to be discussed. The applicant would have the opportunity to file an adjusted need petition in the summer window, which this committee could then act on. So one could take the position that I don't know what the right solution is. I think most of us would like to say we wish that it would be settled locally by mutually acceptable agreements between the parties rather than making a statewide adjustment. All things being equal, that's the cleanest problem.
But if we want to consider this again, we need to vote no today.
No, you can consider it either way. If you vote no today on this and don't adopt an alternative, which is either the petitioner's original petition, which the agency has recommended denial, you could vote to accept it, and then that would go to the June 3rd meeting. If the council accepted it, it would then go out for comment. If we do nothing but accept denial, then there's no vehicle to allow further discussion, but there is an opportunity for an adjusted need determination. But that would be a competitive need, not a policy that would allow essentially a non-competitive transfer, or placement of an MR in a facility that currently doesn't hold the CON. This is what makes it complicated from a policy point of view.
Is there another possible alternative, and maybe this will help me get into some of my comments. We still have another technology committee meeting in May.
That's correct.
So theoretically, we could table the discussion, a decision on this until May. And here is maybe why I'm suggesting this potential outcome. I think I personally like Cape Fear Valley's comments on this, the changes that they made on this petition, with a small caveat of I think there probably needs to be some sort of minimum threshold put in there as well. Maybe it's you have to have, I think theirs was it, basically the way they rewarded it, I'm not going to get the exact wording right, a mobile or a fixed person could apply for if they had a contract, if they hit the certain requirements. If we put some sort of minimum, like if we split the difference of the 1775 trigger, so 865 or so, it said you had to hit this minimum standard before you applied, that would allow not everybody willy-nilly to apply, but you've got an established base which would allow people to get from underneath these contracts, which generally speaking in my experience has been favorable to the owner. I understand why they would do that. It's business. But so if we did that, it would allow a methodology for these folks to change a grandfathered to their own. And, the way the policy is set up now, there will always be duplication with these grandfathered, because the way it's set up, theoretically, because if I applied for a CON, if a need came in and I applied for a CON and step four in the basic methodology, basically it was put in there to allow for folks with a grandfathered to apply for an MRI, to transfer it, to allow their volumes to count. And so if I won that MRI, that grandfather MRI then is going to go back out into the pool. So we're always going to have this theoretical additional inventory. They're just sort of there, and I think we just have to sort of deal with it. It just is what it is. Based on that, I would like to see a method for folks to be able to own their own MRIs. And I think it makes sense to have a fixed MRI on campus. I mean, similar to, I think the next petition we're gonna talk about, I see a lot of merit in that, and having something in the procedure room next to something that's benefit. I see a lot of benefit to having, not transferring an inpatient unit in an ambulance to get an MRI.
I agree.
I wholeheartedly agree we shouldn't make policy on the fly. I guess I don't know if I want to take this on my back. I'm happy to do it. work with the planning department to maybe work out an alternative that we could look at. In my mind, I'm envisioning a combination of Dozier's and Cape Fear Valley's that has some sort of trigger in there that we could vote on at the next committee meeting. I would like to get something in the plan, because like you said, I mean, if we deny it flat out today, there's no opportunity for discussion. So I don't know. That's my comments and a potential alternative.
I think what you're saying is you don't like for them to have to pay $600 in an ambulance to take them to the MRI.
Practicality of it. That's one of the things. I mean, it's just one of the things, one of the issues with it. I mean, I think having it in an ED makes sense. Not transporting it in an ambulance makes sense. It's probably not a whole lot of charge savings, but I think there's probably some cost savings associated with it in the grand scheme of things as well.
Dr. Elrich?
Yes, Dr. Pulliam.
Pulliam here. The only thing I would say, and I appreciate everything that's been said there at the table, I think it's good to pause, draw a deep breath, and then my litmus test always at the meetings I conduct is what makes for better planning. Is it better planning? Are we achieving better planning by the action we take as a committee?
Is that a rhetorical question, TJ?
Yes, it is. No, it wasn't a question. It was a statement. Thank you very much for allowing it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
This is Jeff Moore.
Yes, sir.
I have, a couple of comments, and they're based on knowledge that I have historically of a somewhat similar situation where a small hospital did not have an MRI contracted with a service company to obtain MRI services on campus. And this was about 20 years ago or so, and about 5 years into the contract, they realized that they would much rather administer the service and own the magnet and possess the CON themselves rather mm-hmm. than in conjunction with the management company. And they found their solution with changes in the contract, and they bought out the other party. And it seems to me that this issue is not so much one of utilization or access, but rather more a business problem. And I would suggest that they have a solution. More than likely, it's going to be an expensive solution for the hospital, but that's the cost of having made the decision that they did to begin with. And I guess that's primarily my comment.
Mm-hmm. So would you be speaking in terms of deferral to the next meeting to consider alternatives, or?
No, sir. I think that they have alternatives at hand. It's a business decision, however, so they need to find a contractual solution with the holder of the MRI, CON.
Mm-hmm.
And I would at this point accept the agency's recommendation.
All right. So help, since we have a fairly small group of mm-hmm. voters.
Let me ask you one more time.
Sure.
I want to make sure that we get to consider this again sometime this
mm-hmm.
year. So what do we need to do exactly to be able to do that?
At today's meeting. Not taking into account Mr. Adams' desire to develop a third alternative?
Yeah, I guess my alternative would be to table the discussion.
Well, if that's one of the alternatives,
to the next meeting.
I just want to make sure we get a chance to talk about it a little more this year, if we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are two models. One is the amended need petition or adjusted need petition, which would come back to this committee. The other would be to approve some vehicle, whether it's the petitioner's petition or a modification of the petition, and send that out for comment. And I have no problem sending it out for comment that essentially says we're not satisfied that this is the right solution, but it's a vehicle to have the discussion, essentially saying there's a chance we'll pull the whole thing back.
Why don't you make the motion, since you know what you
But I'm happy to defer. I guess I'm happy to, if you're willing to take on the problem of finding a proposal.
Yeah.
I'm happy to defer this vote until the next meeting, but we will have to act on it at the next mm-hmm. meeting.
You're talking about this committee meeting?
This committee meeting of September or May 13th.
May 13th. We have another committee May 13th before we recommend to the plan
that's
what goes in there.
And if that's acceptable, what essentially need is a motion to defer action until the following meeting.
I make a motion to defer action on this petition to the May 13th.
Okay. I have a proposal and a second to defer action on the agency report. Any further discussion? All right. Those who vote aye are voting for to vote on September, or on May 13th. I want to say September. I'm in a rut. May 13th, we'll anticipate having our vote at the May 13th meeting. If you vote no, we will return to voting on the agency recommendation. I can't make a show of hands on the phone, so I believe that those in favor signify first in the room by saying aye.
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 And Dr. Moore, what will you vote?
I'll vote aye. I don't mind having more discussion and voting later on the petition.
Then we have accepted deferral on this issue pending further discussion prior to our May 13th meeting. Very good. The second petition that was received is a petition for an intraoperative MRI that was filed by the Carolinas Healthcare System. This is the issue on which I will not vote because I happen to work as a private physician in the Carolinas Healthcare System. And I also do neuroradiology, and this is a neuroradiology device. I will tell you that financially it is a rounding error to my life, in the sense that, you know, 60 cases a year done in the OR is, so I have good knowledge about what this is about, I am going to recuse to have the broadest separation between interests and this particular petition. The agency, I will also say, did a lot of work in thinking about this petition, and I'll ask Paige to present the petition and the analysis by the agency.
The request was from the Carolinas Healthcare System. They petitioned to create a special allocation for one intraoperative magnetic resonance imaging unit in the western portion of the state, which would be health service areas 1, 2, and 3, in the 2016 medical facilities plan. A summary of the agency report. The SHIC historically has provided opportunities through adjusted need determinations and special demonstration projects for MRI technology that is to be used for research, specific parts of the body, and particular patient populations. Furthermore, the SHIC has in the past approved the removal of one intraoperative MRI scanner located at Duke University Medical Center from the plan inventory. Operating rooms with iMRI scanners combine the elements of surgery and radiology. Currently, this technology is predominantly used in neurosurgery. The iMRI scanner provides the ability for neurosurgeons to isolate and resect tumors to a degree of accuracy during a surgical procedure that is not available in a conventional operating room. Thus, this reduces the need for the patient to undergo multiple procedures for a complete excision. While the iMRI is still expanding and relatively new, it has existed long enough for researchers to look at the various benefits of the technology. Data presented in the agency report shows that outcomes are improved with this technology. These include reduced length of stay, reduced repeat resection, reduced hospital charges, and costs. The value basic principle section of the SMFP addresses technology and the benefits to patients despite expenditures. The development of new technology has the potential to add value by improving outcome and enhancing early detection. Capital costs of such new technology may be greater, but justified by the added population benefit. The agency supports incorporating new technologies in the state medical facilities plan. However, the petitioner's proposal restricts the special iMRI allocation to health service areas 1, 2, and 3, and includes terms that restrict the group of potential applicants. So given the available information to the deadline and the dates below, the deadline for the comments and petitions, the agency recommends denial of the petition but proposed the creation of policy TE2, which is as follows. Policy TE2 for intraoperative magnetic resonance scanners include: qualified applicants may apply for an intraoperative magnetic resonance scanner to be used in an operating room suite. To qualify, the health service facility proposing to the iMRI scanner shall demonstrate the certificate of need application that it is a licensed acute care hospital, which performed at least 500 inpatient neurosurgical cases during the last 12 months preceding the submission of the application, has at least two neurosurgeons that perform intracranial surgeries currently on its active medical staff, and is located in a metropolitan statistical area as defined by the U.S. Census Bureau with at least 350,000 residents. The IMRI scanner shall not be used for outpatients and may not be replaced with a conventional MRI scanner. Intraoperative procedures and inpatient procedures performed on the IMRI shall be reported separately on the hospital license renewal application. These scanners shall not be counted in the inventory of fixed MRI scanners, and the procedures performed on the IMRI scanner will not be used in calculating the need methodology and will be reported in a separate table in Chapter 9. And with that, that concludes the summary.
So, thank you, Paige. The agency is proposing an alternative to the petitioner's request that involves a policy of a threshold for application that is statewide and open-ended. And basically, it essentially takes it from a competitive model to a qualification model of regulation. Are there comments, concerns of the members of the committee?
Can you tell me, Paige, what of all those different criteria this particular group might not meet at this point? You said, well, they have to have so-and-so of this, and they've got to be in a metropolitan area. I know this area, I know this group, and it seems to me in Charlotte, in the middle of Charlotte, they would meet all your criteria. Are there any that you know of they don't meet at this point?
Not that the county's healthcare system would not meet, no.
So you denied it because we need a new policy before it can be accepted. Is that what I'm getting?
I think the agency's position was that in the original petitioner's request, they restricted it to just a specific area of the state, and so the agency felt like it needed to be a statewide. And then there was restrictions on the types of applicants that would be accepted, and so the agency wanted to broaden the scope of the type of applicant that could apply for this.
So after you get that done, these people could probably pass, correct?
The petitioner?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Actually, the discussion was more the other way, is not to cut somebody out who potentially might want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so volumes of data were looked at. It turns out that in the discharge data, there are three large programs in the state, and then it starts to drop fairly quickly. I don't know who is willing to write a check to do this, but I didn't want to have a series of petitions filed that we would have to rediscuss the issue. So the notion here is one of qualification. If your program reaches a certain threshold, and the threshold is set at a level where a number of smaller programs could get there, that was a better policy, and they would decide whether or not it made sense to mount this kind of a program in their community, because there's no revenue attached. Your OR facility fee doesn't give you a bump if you have an IMRI. So it's really a commitment to a center of excellence and so on. And as the petitioner pointed out in their testimony, you cannot recruit the best people in neurosurgery to a center of excellence program without an instrument like this being part of the program. Four of our sites have AC3 designation and can go that route without having to file a petition. I believe, Martha, do we have one or two that have done that? I know Duke has one. Has anyone else at this point approached you? So really, this was more inclusive than exclusive. The petitioner happens to have the largest program in the state by number, but it wasn't an attempt to create a threshold that, you know, only they would cross, or two guys. The idea was more of how can we create a threshold that's reasonable and then give people the option to build their program. You can't compete for inpatients, in a sense. Once they're in your hospital, it's no longer a competitive market. Does that make sense? Dr. Moore, do you have any questions about that?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, if I may. What is the rationale for including the limitations in number 3, Metropolitan Statistical Area, with a threshold population. What's the rationale for including that?
Paige, do you want to speak? Normally I'd ask Rectal to speak that, or Shelley, do you feel comfortable speaking to how that was derived?
Again, it was looking at the inclusiveness. We kind of did want to set a threshold of success for this, and so we honestly thought it was going to be higher, but to make it a potential to grow into, we looked at across the state, and that just was the number. Are you questioning whether we even need to...
No, the, right, the question isn't the number, but rather why. Yes, because it looks to me like your necessity is to limit to those centers that would use it, use the device on an ongoing basis at a regular rate, sufficient to make it a necessity. And you've put in, you know, a couple of other requirements that get toward that. And I just kind of wonder why we would limit it to a particular geography.
I hear your point. Again, maybe we were just trying, it came up that it was a good criteria. Partially, we're always considering the viability of the program. So in other words, the success of what will happen. And so we felt like having a population base to sustain is a good thing. Dr. Ulrich, do you have any
Chris,
yeah.
Chris, hey, this is Pulliam. Just a quick question. You know, I'm just kind of thinking again through the lenses of better planning, statewide quality, access, value. I'm sorry, I'm not there at the table to see how everyone's thinking and so forth. But you know, it almost sounded like, you know, we know that Duke has one. We're looking for Charlotte. Is that the western part of the state? What about north, south, east, west? Do we need to be thinking in terms of planning such that we're really covering the state from Murphy to Manio? I don't know.
The
maybe
answer,
that's a harebrained idea.
The answer, TJ, is that these are set in a manner that would allow the only center in the east to qualify and the only center in the west to qualify.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Say that again.
It is written in a manner in which the only possible center in the east qualifies if the program grows a little bit, and the only center in the western part of the state, which falls in the 350,000 MSA. In fact, it was intentionally written to be inclusive. East, west, north, south. The center part of the state, north, south, east, west, contains the majority of potential sites for this.
All right.
But the I would also say to Dr. Moore that that third comment, that third standard, which is the 350 MSA, is a barrier to no one who potentially would. And in fact, if it were eliminated, would change virtually nothing in terms of what would happen. But there was a concern on the part of the agency that you had to have a population base that was reasonable in order to be a qualified applicant. And the number 350 was derived from the MSAs that were tied to the volumes of the programs in the state.
Understood.
Could I ask a question,
Absolutely.
Too, Chris, just so my brain can wrap around this? So, you know, we're talking about neurosurgery. It's kind of dear to me. I had a sister before I was born that died of a brain tumor, so hopefully I'm not fixing to have one. But, you know, if MRIs then become necessary for pancreatic cancer or lymphoma or some such, what is the process then? Do we have to get a whole new policy specific to those, or can we build off of the policy that's accepted today? I mean, you know,
Good question, and I'll answer it in the simplest form. There's no data to support those applications that we could use as a criteria. What we would do, and my anticipate would do, is we would amend the policy to broaden the application base when and if data, credible data, arises that would allow a site that didn't have neurosurgery but had a large volume of other applications that were appropriate to qualify. And that would be a simple petition. And in my view, if the numbers were there, the committee would approve it with no qualm.
Well, good. Thank you. Because I just want to make sure that we can always be dynamic in the decisions we're making and anticipate what may come.
Absolutely. But today, neurosurgery is the only driver for this technology that you can get a number around that we could depend on.
Okay, good.
Yes, sir.
Just a curious question, Martha, with the Duke one. Are we, is it currently being reported separately on their license, the neurosurgery procedures?
They just started.
I gotcha.
Getting it in place, and so as a demonstration, I mean, no, actually,
they're an AC3.
They're an AC3, sorry. We hadn't reached that. We were going to be looking for their info, but with this, we will then want to capture all that.
And
one of the things I want to do, Trey, is actually track utilization over time.
Right, which makes sense, which is great.
Which is report our data. Right. Tell us what you're doing with it.
Right.
Who, is there going to be anything in here that in the policy or what translates into the CON that restricts use to neuro on the MRI? I mean, is the hospital, no.
No, it's the qualification.
The only restriction would be they can't use it for outpatients.
Yeah.
But they can use
That's
it for
correct.
Any inpatient. They want to take them up to the
OR. And this has to do with not upsetting the competitive balance in the market. And
I have a question then based on what you just said. So if I understand it, Medicare has a list of what they call, quote, inpatient only surgeries. So, and I guess since it's Medicare, maybe we have to roll up under that what we do in North Carolina since it's a Medicare standard. So is that one reason that, because I can't imagine anyone going into someone's brain is planning to do that as an outpatient. But so is that why we're talking inpatient standard here, because of Medicare?
No, it just has to do with keeping it simple and not giving an institution an untoward advantage over its neighbors.
Okay. All right.
And the reality is the majority of these are going to be in a place in the OR where you can't even get inpatients easily.
Right.
And so it's more a question of not creating a capacity which gives somebody essentially an advantage over its neighbor because it was able to qualify for an intraoperative device. The rationale is I'm using it for surgery.
Gotcha. Good. Thanks.
And we will track it. And if there are problems, we will deal with it. But I think it will be healthy for us to begin to see the data. How many patients a year? What are the cases that they're doing? And it'll start out small, but that'll give us the ability to understand where the technology is going over time and go from there.
In tracking the data, sorry, my computer died, so I don't have it in front of me. On the licensure report, are we just going to separately monitor neurosurgery?
No, it'll be the magnet reporting
the
what it's
magnet
done.
By itself. Okay.
But the reality is only neurosurgeons right now are lining up to use it. We could ask them, I guess, if later on what the DRG was for the patient if we wanted to. But right now I think what you're most interested in, it seems to me, Trey, is this is going to be 60, 100 patients a year in most programs. What you want to see is that, you know, in 2015 they did 60, and then maybe they did 70 a year later.
Right.
You know, just where is the trend line? Or is it going to be like our PET scanning where people were showing us graphs, you know, doing this, and we're now in 4 years of negative utilization? And that'll help you judge over time whether this is a good investment as well, you know, a good use of money over time as well.
So we're going to incorporate these criteria sometime this year in our plan, correct?
This will become what's called a policy in the plan, and it will be adopted in 2016. I don't know when the application dates might be or how that'll be handled by the section, but it'll become a standing policy. So no one will come to us with another petition like this one asking for an additional need in, you know, left side, right side of the state. We now will say there is a policy, you need to qualify.
Inclusive.
Yeah. Quite frankly, I'll be very surprised if somebody just inches over the line wants to do this, the way this has been drawn. But I've been surprised before.
Dr. Albert?
Yeah.
Dr. Albert?
Yes, Mr. Pullen. DJ?
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
I'm Dr. sorry. I'm going to need to cut off. I've got some starving patients that I have to do unmentionable things to. So do you need me to stick on for the vote? I can do that. Or?
I'll call it right now, and we'll see what happens. If there are no further discussion. Everybody comfortable? Dr. Moore, are you comfortable with voting?
Yes, sir.
Those who vote aye are voting to adopt policy which will be termed TE2 in the technology section. If you vote no, we will either return to the original petition or that will be the end of the discussion. So all of those in favor of adopting the agency report for policy TE2 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Moore? Aye. Dr. Pulliam, you are free to go do that which needs to be done.
I shall. Thank you. Good work, and I appreciate you letting me listen, and I have a much better understanding, so thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Paige, we need to review the data tables and the need projections.
Okay. So I posted table 9P, the first draft of table 9P for the 2016 plan that includes both fixed and mobile procedures by MRI service area with tiered thresholds and equivalents. The data indicates that there is a draft need projection for two additional MRI machines, one in Lincoln County and one in Mecklenburg County. Of course, there are caveats to this data since I'm still have some missing procedures from some of the service areas, but anticipate obviously that being cleaned by the June 3rd SHIC meeting. And that concludes the data, the need determination. Yes, sir.
Paige, can you give us any idea what the procedure trend line is in the data that you have at the present time?
The procedure trend line is just about where it was last year at this time. Mm-hmm. I mean, based on what I'm seeing, the percentage is remaining stable.
So not a lot of growth in the data table over the year before. All right, we need a motion to adopt the data table as its present form, recognizing that revisions and corrections will be made as better data becomes available. So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 It's adopted. Thank you, sir. All right, we are moving on to cardiac catheterization. Paige will initially review the policies and need methodologies.
First, I'll start with the methodology, which can be found on page 172 of the 2015 State Medical Facilities Plan. The cardiac catheterization equipment planning areas are the same as the acute care bed service areas as defined in Chapter 5, acute care beds, and shown in Figure 5.1. The cardiac catheterization equipment area is a single county unless there is no licensed acute care hospital located within the county, and those counties are grouped with the single county where the largest proportion of patients receive inpatient services. There are two standard need determination methodologies for cardiac catheterization equipment. Methodology 1 is the standard methodology for determining need for additional fixed cardiac catheterization equipment, and methodology 2 is for shared fixed cardiac catheterization equipment. The steps in methodology part 1. For fixed cardiac catheterization equipment, procedures are weighted based on complexity, as described on page 199. The SHIC defines capacity as 1,500 diagnostic equivalent procedures per year. We determine the number of fixed cardiac catheterization equipment required by dividing the number of weighted or diagnostic equivalent procedures performed at each facility by 1,200 procedures, which is 80% of the 1,500 capacity. We then compare the calculated number of acquired units of equipment with the current inventory to determine if there is a need. Steps for methodology part 2. If no unit of fixed cardiac catheterization equipment is located in a service area, a need exists for one shared fixed cardiac catheterization equipment when the number of mobile procedures done in the service area exceeds 240 or 80% of 300 capacity per year for each 8 hours per week in operation at that site. And with that concludes the methodology review.
Thank you, Paige. Any questions about the present methodology as described in the plan? Hearing none, we'll entertain a motion with a second to reaffirm the policies in the plan.
So moved.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Paige, let's now go on to the change in cardiac catheterization need determination methodology submitted by Wake Med.
Yes. So there was one petition for this, and that was the Wake Med. There were four comments submitted to the agency, and they were all in opposition to the petition. The request from the petitioner is that they requested a methodology for determining need for cardiac catheterization equipment in North Carolina be revised for the 2016 State Medical Facilities Plan. A summary of the agency report. Statewide data indicates cardiac catheterization procedures have been declining and continue to do so, as in the 2013 data, which is the data year for the 2015 State Medical Facilities Plan. Table 1 in the agency report shows this trend. There have been five need determinations from 2007 to 2015 in the SMSPs. Two successful petitions requesting adjusted need determinations had an impact on this total. One removed a need determination and another added a need determination. The current methodology, along with the declining procedure volumes, are currently generating very few need determinations across the state. Wake Med, in their petition, discussed some of the issues from a previous petition that was submitted in 2013 by New Hanover Regional Medical Center, which include the capacity of one machine at 1,500 weighted procedures is too low, and that both diagnostic and interventional procedures do not take as long as assumed in the current methodology. Discussions about procedure volumes are further complicated by the idea that despite the methodology, facilities may judge capacity at their respective hospitals differently depending on the hours of operation. Further considerations include the number of cardiac catheterization units at each facility. Raising the threshold or changes in the procedure weighting may have a greater impact on providers with one machine as compared to facilities with several machines. The logic is that facilities with one machine may not be able to build efficiencies of service with the cleaning and turnaround of the room between patients as providers with multiple machines. Thus, with a higher threshold, facilities with fewer units or procedure volumes may be prevented from generating a need. And any increases in capacity of the equipment would further limit the number of calculated need determinations, which is already fairly low. Currently, the methodology appears to be working, and further restricting the calculation of need determinations does not seem warranted at this time. And facilities in the past have applied for adjusted need determinations, which have been successful. So given that information and the comments that were submitted to the agency recommends denial of this petition.
So I will treat the agency recommendation as a motion for discussion. Dr. Moore, do you have any concerns you want to comment on this particular agency recommendation?
No, sir.
Okay.
I don't think I guess mine's more global. I think their comments hit on something, a more global thing that I'm going to continue to harp on, is looking at the methodologies in some sort of systematic method every 5 years or so. And if somebody wants, if Wake Med wants cardiac cath to be looked at, I think it would be a reasonable place to start on as we systematically move through the methodologies and review it. So I don't think I have I think I'm okay with the agency's recommendation, but I think my recommendation would be, okay, this is the first methodology that this committee looks at.
Mm-hmm. We'll take that as a separate issue.
Yeah, as a separate issue.
Dr. Akers, no comment? Well, let's vote on the motion, and then we can return perhaps briefly to the methodology review issue, which I know I promised you last year we would undertake. So a yes vote is to deny the petition as submitted, and there is no substitute policy attached to this agency recommendation. So all those in favor of the agency recommendation signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And it is adopted. With regard to your second point, I would prefer to have an offline conversation on prioritization.
Okay.
But I will reiterate, I'm in favor of doing what you request. What we'll balance it on is staff time, availability, and prioritization.
Fair enough.
And, you know, the Gamma Knife one, for instance, I don't think we need to put near the top of the list.
No, exactly.
And go from there.
Well, okay. The Tripsy, I don't, you know.
Well, the Tripsy's interesting this year. So let's review the table very quickly and adopt it, and then we're going to move a little faster through the rest of this.
So I did present it to the committee, the table, tables 9S, which is the adult diagnostic fixed cardiac cath procedures by facility and aggregate cath totals, 9T, which is pediatric diagnostic cath procedures, 9U, mobile cardiac cath procedures, 9V, which is percutaneous coronary interventional procedures, and 9W, which is the table where the needs where the need determinations are calculated and displayed. Our preliminary data indicates there is a one draft need for additional cardiac catheterization equipment in Cumberland County. And that concludes the data for cardiac cath.
Can I have a motion to approve the tables with the recognition of further amendments as better data becomes available? Second. Dr. Moore, any questions?
No, sir.
Then will those who favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
It is adopted. Thank you very much. One of the issues I think that did come out of this discussion on the petition is this issue of productivity in the small versus large, and where do you apportion? Mm-hmm. I believe the petitioner is absolutely correct that in a busy multi-facility lab, we'll probably have assumptions that are too long. Mm-hmm. However, at the current lower threshold, we're not triggering needs.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's part of the dilemma of what to do. Let's move on to Chapter 9. We will hear Paige very briefly summarize the lithotripsy methodology.
Okay. So the lithotripsy planning area is the entire state, so this is a statewide determination. We use the July 1st, 2014 estimated population of the state to determine the estimated incidence of urinary stone disease per 10,000 population. Based on the assumption 90,000 of patients could be treated with lithotripsy, we use the estimated incidence to calculate the number of patients in the state who have the potential to be treated. The low range of annual treatment capacity is 1,000, and we the need will be identified when comparing the number of lithotripsers in the inventory to the number of needed based on projected incidence of urinary stone disease. And that concludes the methodology.
Do you want to go over, Paige, the need projection as well?
Yes. So there is one projected need determination statewide for a lithotripter.
All right. So I'm going to entertain a dual motion of adopting the table and the need recommendation for lithotripsy. Can I have a motion?
So moved. So moved.
Great. Dr. Moore, second. If you vote yes, we adopt the table and the current need in the plan. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It's adopted. Moving on to PET scanners. Paige, did I skip one?
No.
Okay. PET scanners. Paige will review the methodology, and we'll go ahead and review at the same time the data need projections.
Okay. So there is one policy which is associated with the PET section of the Chapter 9, which is the policy of conversion of fixed, which is TE1, the conversion of fixed to mobile PET scanners, which was last year. The methodology for the scanners as follows. There are six multi-county groupings called health service areas. A fixed PET scanner service area is the health service area in which the scanner is located. And currently, we have two mobile PET scanner planning regions, which are in the east and the west, which has recently become statewide last year. The steps in the methodology, part one. For PET scanners, we determine current inventory and multiply the number of fixed PET scanners at each facility by 3,000 procedures to determine capacity at each facility. A need is determined for an additional fixed PET scanner if the utilization percentage is 80% or greater. Step two, this part of the methodology provides a condition to determine a need for one additional fixed PET if a hospital-based major cancer treatment facility program or provider does not own or operate a fixed dedicated PET scanner. The exception is that for both parts of the methodology combined, the maximum need determination for a single health service area in any one year will be no more than two additional scanners. And with that, that concludes the methodology.
Mm-hmm. Are there any need projections on the plan?
There are no need projections. It may look like there's one because there's some erroneous data in Buncombe County where they reported about 8,000 procedures. They've told me that they think this is an error, which considering it's eight times what they reported last year, we're in agreement. So it may look like there's a need, but there's some erroneous data in that particular table. We expect to have that corrected.
Mm-hmm. And is the utilization trend line continue to look negative?
Yes.
Okay, so I think that would be year five of declining total use across the state. Part of this is, I think no one on the committee now was here when the original discussion. This is an example where a projected idea did not pan out. At the time this was discussed, there were two drivers for this technology. One was oncology, and the other was cardiac PET, which was projected to grow dramatically across the state. And we elected to distribute PET scanners based on oncology center designation, recognizing that there was no major cardiac center in the state that also wasn't a designated oncology center. And so we use that as a proxy of need, and some sites are busier than others as a result, because it wasn't initially a need-driven model. But the cardiac utilization has gone to near zero. But when the original planning idea came forth, we had one of those, you know, five-year projection things with, you know, the arrow heading somewhere toward the ceiling. And but this is a good case example of where our best thinking, what didn't pan out in subsequent years. And as a result, we then had the reimbursement clamp put on the utilization of PET, and that has had that negative, essentially bent the cost curve into the negative territory now for 5 years. Why don't we go ahead and vote on both the methodology and the data table combined, and then I'm going to ask Martha a question. So those voting aye are to accept the report, the data table, recognizing that 8,000 is probably going to be revised. All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. It's adopted. Martha, we of course wrote TE1 last year for the education of the committee. When is the application date for an interested party? Because I promised Trey that we would review this.
That's a category J, and category J is a statewide category, and that review cycle begins July 1, 2015, so the applications are due. Assuming June 15th is a weekday, they'll be due on June 15th.
So mid-June is when we'll know who may or may not have decided to take advantage of policy TE1. As you all recall, a conversion of one scanner should take the utilization number down below the threshold, or at least would anticipate that it would, given the no growth. If we have two applicants, we will have more than adequate mobile capacity. If we have three, we'll be swimming in capacity. So, I have no notion of who will apply. But anyway, that's the time frame. And as we discussed last year, because of that time frame, it's really the 17 plan where we have our next opportunity. So, very good. Let's talk about linear accelerators.
Okay. We had no petitions or comments to this section. The need methodology is as follows. Linear accelerator planning areas are the 28 multi-county grouping shown in Table 9I. The methodology to determine the need for an additional linear accelerator in a service area must look at three criteria. For the accessibility criterion one, we divide the area population based on the 2013 population estimate that we received from the North Carolina Office of Budget Management by the inventory to determine the population per linear accelerator. If the result is greater than or equal to 120,000 per linear accelerator, criterion one is satisfied. For patient origin, criteria two, we divide the number of patients served from outside the service area based on reported patient origin data by the total number of patients served. If more than 45% of the total patients served outside the service area, then criteria two is satisfied. For efficiency, criterion three, we calculate the average number of equivalent simple treated visits, or ESTVs, per linear accelerator in each service area and divide by 6,750 to determine how many are needed. If the difference between the number needed and the current inventory is greater than or equal to a positive 0.25, criterion three is satisfied. If any of the two of the three criteria is satisfied, in a linear service area, a need is determined for one additional linear accelerator in that service area. To complete the methodology, there's a criterion four, which provides an exception for counties who reach a population of 120,000 or more and do not have a linear accelerator in inventory for that county. And that concludes the methodology reviews. Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman.
Do you want to also do the data review?
Sure. there is one need, one projected draft need for a linear accelerator, which is Harnett County. Their population remains over 120,000, which is criterion four. It was in there last year.
Is there a mechanism in the plan, because there's already a need in the 2015 plan for that linear accelerator. So is there a mechanism in the after to account for that? Because we don't know until August 17th when we're going to be getting out.
I don't know that there is a mechanism. I'd have to, we need to probably look at that because this will.
We don't get an app, but it would show up again the next year, but if we get an app, then that should knock it out of 2000.
Assuming you award the CO1. Hmm? Assuming you award it.
Well, that's correct. We always think positively.
Thinking off the top of my head, which is probably not the right thing to do on this issue, is that this committee's fall meeting falls after that date, and I don't know if I need a motion to do this, but my notion would be that an adjusted need motion would be filed in the event that there was an applicant, suspending that in the following plan unless the applicant failed, or something along. I don't know if we're allowed, how we're allowed. I'd have to research whether we're allowed, how we're allowed to do that. But we certainly get to act on adjusted needs in the fall. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure who has standing to file the adjustment. So it, but I mean, that's what I would anticipate as a way out of that box. No one believes
that. But it was like a surprise to me to find it in there when it's in the 2015 plan.
Yeah, no one expects Harnett County to support two units. Very reasonable. Martha, could you consult with Drextel on what we should, you know, what the agency thinks would be the way to handle or avoid an unintended duplication in the plan? I think everyone will be comfortable with a reasonable approach.
We could address that in May too, if we got an answer.
If we get an answer, yeah. But it, you know, one way or another, we'll just clarify what our mechanism will be, because no one believes we should inadvertently duplicate it. And go from there. So I need a motion to adopt the linear accelerator portion of the plan, including the recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It is approved. Let's move on to the Gamma Knife review.
Okay.
Oh, there is one other thing, and I didn't touch on, and that is that I think we're all aware that ESTVs are a obsolete unit of measurement of value. And so I have had discussions with the staff about collecting CPT code data in parallel with the ESTV data, starting in the next reporting period for a period of 2 years, to allow us to model how we might migrate off of ESTV onto a standardized billing record of CPT coding going forward. I would expect everyone on the committee would be comfortable with that. We're not prepared to present that today as a motion, but at the May 13th meeting, we will probably have that discussion, at least so we can put it out for public comment for the summer and then make a decision in the fall what data we will ask people to submit. But I am very concerned that ESTV is not going to keep us where we need to be longer term. So, okay, on to Gamma Knives.
The review of the need methodology, there are two Gamma Knife planning regions, the West, which is Health Service Areas 1, 2, and 3, and the East, which is Health Service Areas 4, 5, and 6. There is one Gamma Knife located at Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center in Health Service Area 2 that serves the western part of the state, and a Gamma Knife located at Vidant Medical Center and Health Service Area 6, which serves the eastern portion of the state. There are no tables for the data, but the data is updated in the verbiage of the plan. I think Baptist reported 300, and Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center reported 375 Gamma Knife procedures, and 133 procedures reported by Vidant Medical Center currently. There is no need methodology. The two Gamma Knives assure the western and eastern portions of the state have equal access to Gamma Knife services, with adequate capacity and geographical accessibility. That concludes Gamma Knife. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. I need a motion to accept the report and the status of Gamma Knife.
So moved.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. It is adopted. Now we need a final recommendation for all of our actions today, recognizing we have deferred one petition to the next meeting. The motion is to authorize the staff to make updates and corrections to all tables and narratives as needed, including updates to the preambles. So I need a motion for that motion. Seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none, please signify agreement by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. Is there any old business that the Technology and Equipment Committee needs to address, or an issue on the mind of the committee members that needs to be brought to the attention of the committee or the SHIC that has not already been voiced? Dr. Moore, anything on your mind?
No, sir.
Thank you. We're okay?
Aye. Okay.
So let's then move on. The next Technology and Equipment Committee meeting is Wednesday, May 13th. At 10 a.m. in this room. The next full State Health Coordinating Council meeting is Wednesday, June 3rd, 2015, 10 a.m. again in this room. Is there any other issue that I need to be aware of in the public meeting before we adjourn? Seeing all no's, and I assume Dr. Moore is comfortable, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very good meeting. Have a good day.
You too, sir. Hope to see you in person.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, yeah.
Is Kelly back yet? Or?
Mm-hmm.